Welcome to Out With Dan, the podcast that spotlights and examines the voices of LGBTQ+ authors, characters, and our allies. Together, we lift our voices and we tell our stories. I'm Dan White. Join me as I chat with this week's author. Hello, and welcome back to Out With Dan. Today, I'm excited to talk to Lee Mandello about their book, The Woods All Black. Welcome, Lee.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, this book was so fun and so different for me in a little ways. And I think we're referring to it as a historical Appalachian Gothic book. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. It should hit all the highlights of it. I just absolutely love the fact that it's historical, and I feel like it really captures the sense of what 1929 would be like.
Yes, that was something that was, I think, really central to the project for me, as like my other hat is a practicing academic, even though I'm not a historian. It's still, you get the research gene, you look up too many things. part of also why this book took a few years, I would say, to finish. I think I proposed it initially in 2020, and now we're in 2024.
Okay.
Because what I thought would be a little bit of research turned into a good year and a half of like archive work, because there's so much stuff.
There is. And, you know, so we give a little flavor of what the book is like, and then we'll talk about what you mentioned here.
Yeah. So it takes place in the eastern counties of Kentucky. Our protagonist, Leslie, works for the Frontier Nursing Service, which was a real thing, where a philanthropist had set up basically these hospital outposts and nurses on horseback to provide vaccination, reproductive health care, that sort of thing to people who had no access to that, because there simply were no hospitals or doctors often for hundreds of miles in any direction at that point. And then the flip side of that being, it was part of, you know, the early reproductive justice movement was a white eugenics movement largely. So yes, that's a complicated part of the history. While good is being done at the same time, what is some of the motivations for it? So she's carrying all that in. That's how people refer to Leslie. He thinks of himself as an invert, what we might think of now as someone who's a bit of like a he, him, but lesbian identified person. Goes into town and sees this like young, thinks must be a boy. The town thinks he's not, named Stevie, and it's them sort of coming together to resist this religious horror, more or less, in this small town together.
I love it. That's a wonderful description, and it is exactly what a reader would get from this book, plus all of the flavors that go along with it. So I looked up from your website where you're from, and you grew up south of Louisville, and somehow I assumed perhaps you had grown up in the eastern part of Kentucky, where a great deal of my dad's family ended up living. So some of the people Leslie would have dealt with would sadly have probably been my family. So did you grow up religious, you yourself?
Yes, I was raised in the like Pentecostal Southern Church, which, you know, it's a rough go if you're a gay child or a trans child or both. So I think that's a lot of this book was sort of dealing with some of that history, but also making that a bit of a joyful revenge tale in its own way for all of us who've experienced those things.
Well, and I noticed, so since you said that, I'm going to call them out. I noticed that there's a Church of God, which is also part of the Pentecostal Holiness religion. And I have quite a few family members who are PH members. And so I totally understood. One of the things that I find that I think you highlight so well in this book, and I think sadly it's some of the things that we're still dealing with in today's world, is how religion wants people to be as uneducated as possible often. And that's something I think that I still see. And it's a sad commentary.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the politics of the book. You know, when I proposed it, 2020, the plan, and then through writing it, our, you know, national politics have gotten a lot more brazen about the anti-gay, anti-trans, et cetera, maneuvering that's happening. But it's also very similar to what we saw in the 20s, which I think is that history teaches us lessons moment, is that there was a really big flourishing in the 20s of queer people post-World War I. people were going, there was a pansy craze. That was what they called it. Straight folks going to the drag bars. And then we hit the 30s and fascism in the US and Europe happens. And I think that's an important sort of lesson to look at from our current moment, that we just did that, guys. Like, let's not do it again.
Precisely.
We are. Yeah.
Precisely. And I think that that's why this book is so important, because, you know, we have to know our history. We have to know where we came from. If anyone in this world thinks that a person biologically born a woman can't identify as a man, they're just out of their mind. I remember growing up in a small town in Eastern North Carolina, and we had a couple of women that we called, you know, I might look back and say butch now, but I mean, honestly, they always wore jeans, they had short haircuts, and they did the work of a man. And so your characters, I'm like, I saw these people growing up, and yet here we are in 2024, still grappling with the same things. If it's not your body, why are you concerned?
Exactly. And there's some of what I think is fun to look at when, you know, we're writing about ourselves as queer people that you don't get maybe in the mainstream films or stuff that aren't, they're made to explain us, you know, in a sense to people, is that like Leslie and Stevie think of their genders very differently, but from the outside, a person might perceive them as the same. And they come together about it and they have communication about, well, no, I see myself this way. And that's those lines between some folks are butch, like some folks identify this way or this way. There's a lot more to it. And I think that's the pleasure, sort of the joy of making queer art, is getting to, you know, just talk about those different kinds of people and how we can come together in community.
I agree. And I think, you know, I remember in reading this, when Leslie comes to the little town in the Holler, which I love because I've seen several little towns in the Holler in my life, and see Stevie, there's a bit of a recognition, but not a complete knowing, but there's a bit of recognition, which I love that, because I do think that people on the queer spectrum, we do see each other. We recognize those things in our other tribe members that, you know, something about them turns a switch on.
Yeah. It's a way of survival. I think it's always very interesting for folks who are kind of coming into their own, coming into the community, to start developing that sense. Like, I think it tends to start with the people you know are just like you. And you're like, oh, I recognize that reference you made, or the way you're standing or speaking, or the signal that you gave me. And then the more time you spend, the more you see. And that's, I think, one of the internal perspective for Leslie in the book, has read all these novels, like has the 20s queer theory, has a very strong sense of himself, like through the sexological discourse of the time, thinks of himself as someone who mostly is interested in feminine women, and then meets Stevie and is like, huh, well, I guess there's more going on here than I thought. And Stevie very much thinks of himself just as a gay boy who got born a little bit different, but yet is still kind of into Leslie. So it's that interesting crossing over that I remember Pat Califia wrote a lot about in the 90s, and I still think those are fun to go back and read, is the, we do this sometimes. It's just part of the recognizing each other and what's interesting across those boundaries. So I was having fun with that.
Oh, I'm glad. Well, I am glad you had fun, because I think it comes out in the book as well. There are just some tender moments that are just breathtaking. I mean, something as simple as sharing of cigarettes. I mean, it is, cigarettes were a very big part of Eastern Kentucky. They probably still are, just as they are in North Carolina. And a tobacco crop, I mean, it plays an important part. And I remember my parents saying, you know, my dad started smoking at age 11 because his uncle had a tobacco farm. It's just what you did. So yeah. I could recognize those things. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about Leslie's backstory, which I found to be so interesting, which I think colors Leslie's current part in the book as well.
Yeah. So he had signed up to go off to war in World War I, despite being technically underage, as was very common at that point in the wartime effort. You had a lot of teenagers enlisting. No one was really checking that hard also. But the experiences that he had as a nurse overseas in the war, particularly the location that I have him set in, is near some of the worst of the fighting before armistice, is like seeing things no human should see sort of mentality. So he's very much older than his years in some ways, but it's also given him a great deal of sort of that self-protective post-traumatic stress. He's bad at relationships. Like, that's very much an undercurrent. It's like, why are all the women that I date leaving me? Like, sort right. of not terrible, but just they feel there's no intimacy, that I can't open up to them. And some of that, I think, is the trauma that we deal with of having been on the front where he's experiencing all this horror, but also it's the first time he's experiencing being among a bunch of other queer people, because that is something that we very much know, especially about the nursing corps, the women's quote unquote, like corps at that point. They were largely populated by the kinds of people we would call women who did not want to be married and at home and maybe wanted to be in a homosexual environment. Creates a certain tone.
Well, so
together, yeah.
And of course, by giving Leslie that backstory, you've given Leslie sort of legs to stand on as far as being able to go out as a rural nurse and go out and do a job that there's an enemy within the encampment, so to speak. I mean, when Leslie comes to the holler, I can't imagine that if I were Leslie, that I wouldn't have felt like I was back at war, because you had, you know, people in very rural places are often very suspicious of outsiders for any reason. And then, of course, we have churches that teach them that somebody brings evil in, which is one of the funniest things to me. Evil isn't brought in. Someone's either good or bad, but nobody brings evil. It's not like you carry it in a bucket. But it was a phrase the preacher used in your book, and I thought to myself, I've heard that so often, sadly.
Yeah. For sure. And I think that, yeah, that's some of what I'm getting at there, that I'm so glad. It's nice when you know people have the similar experiences. They're like, oh, that. Like, yes, that. That sense of having to cast out anything that doesn't fit. And the precisely. Level of violence that you can experience in those places where it's really like adapt, which usually means smothering who you are or die. And I think that's still very real for a lot of people right now, even though I think we like to pretend sometimes it isn't, it still is for so many, especially kids who are trapped in those kinds of situations.
We've seen that recently in the news, yeah. And it's so heartbreaking that we're still fighting these kinds of things and these kinds of prejudice when we shouldn't be. Yeah. I mean, your book should be in every high school for kids to be able to read.
Yeah, I do think, yeah, that's something we've been friends, of course, talking about, struggling with. I'm only in my mid-30s, so like objectively fairly young, but also had that thought of like, I really hope kids now don't have to go through high school like I did, because, you know, early 2000s was also a rough time to be gay in high school. Like there's only a few years where things were looking up, and I feel like a lot of anger on their behalf that they don't deserve to have to deal with this. And I know that that's every generation to the one behind you. It's like, I wanted it to be better for you than it was for us.
Precisely. Very, like,
yeah. Intense of an emotional moment, I think.
I agree. You know, it wasn't so fun in the 70s and 80s either. So, you know, it's just, it's one of those things that I keep thinking that any day now we're really going to turn the corner. And sadly, it really does mean that some people who are older and full of hatred, they just have to die eventually for us to be able to make it a little better, because unfortunately they have a stranglehold on some parts of this country. So
honestly, yeah, like I really thought we were done with the Anita Bryant stuff, and we're not. And that's right. Also undergirding some of this text is the, like, the way these people talk, like, you right. know, the rhythms of the speech.
Yes. And I'm going to mention one word that you highlight sort of in the book, and that was the word can't towards the end of the book. And that's the way I pronounced it growing up. I had a very hard I, which is the same thing for Eastern Kentucky, because the Irish just moved from Eastern North Carolina to Eastern Kentucky, and that's their way of speaking. And mm-hmm. so I love that Leslie picks up on the fact that Stevie pronounces can't as can't. And it's yeah. a big thing. So I loved it. It was also, for me, I don't hate where I came from. I might not like everything that went on, but, you know, I understand completely. Sadly, I even understand the villagers, because I saw that growing up. It was a life lesson to be afraid of somebody different and outside. Mm-hmm. And now I try to find those people because they're a lot more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think for the people who live there, I think some of what I was doing, like obviously some folks are just terrible. Like the preacher is awful. Sarah is awful. And I think that was making a point there too about the ways, particularly like white, cisgender, straight women are very much also committing gender and sexual based violence against everyone else. And I think that's something we tend to forget or gloss over, but you know, that is the reality. But then there are also the people who just don't stop it. And I do think that complicity is like, it doesn't matter if you maybe don't agree with what your neighbors are doing, if you don't do anything about it and you don't stop it from happening, you're just as complicit. And I think that was something I was looking at in there for sure. And well, I love Kentucky, but good Lord, it's hard to live. <know?
laughs> I'm right there with you on Eastern North Carolina. I'm planning on going back in the summer to visit family and friends, but it's sort of like, you sort of feel like you have to hitch up your pants and tighten your belt because you know you might have a fight on your hands. And like Leslie, I can handle the fight, but I'd rather not fight if I don't have to.
Yes.
So, do you have social media or a website you'd like to share?
Yes, they're pretty easy. It's just my name, leemandello.com, and on all the socials.
Fantastic. Here's the cover of the book. And I do want to read the little byline. It says, "When they call you a monster, show your teeth." I loved that. I thought that is absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I think that's the political moment we're back in.
Yes. Thank you for joining me for this week's episode of Out with Dan. You can find more information about this podcast and its host at outwithdan.com, on Twitter at @outwithdan, and on Instagram and Facebook at @GoOutWithDan. This podcast is hosted by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and the theme music is provided by bensound.com. Join us again soon for the next episode of Out with Dan.